Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Horticulture Week podcast. I'm Rachel Forsyth, senior reporter at Hort Week, and this week I'm joined by Chief Executive of Trees for Cities, Kate Sheldon. Thank you so much for joining me today, Kate.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's lovely to meet you, Rachel. Thank you.
Yeah, it's lovely to meet you as well. We've been reporting on Trees for Cities for a while, but it's great to kind of have you here today so I can kind of learn a bit more about what you guys are up to. And you've been at the charity for nearly 20 years, is it?
I'm in my 19th year. Yes,
okay, yeah,
so I can remember because it's the same age as my son virtually. So, yeah.
Lovely, that's nice and handy, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. So I've been at the charity since 2004.
Great. And you've recently become...
Chief exec, yes.
Yes.
Only for 2 months. So I started as chief executive in February.
And that must have been such an incredible opportunity because you're clearly so passionate and you have such a commitment to the charity. So amazing that you can take on that role.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a real honour. I mean, it's such a fantastic charity and it's changed so much in the time that I've been working with Trees for Cities. So.
Oh, really? What's one of the biggest changes?
Well, it's a much bigger charity now, for starters. Mm. So when I first started... We have an office in Kennington Park in South London, and it's a park lodge, and it's an interesting building. It was built for the Great Exhibition in 1851 as a model for social housing. And then it was moved to Kennington Park, and so it's a strange building where you can't access up and downstairs internally. You have to go outside to go upstairs.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. And I was the first member of staff to be put downstairs, so I was on my own downstairs for years. People didn't know who I was, but I just quietly got on with my job, and then eventually I was allowed to move upstairs.
nice. Oh, fantastic. So before we delve into kind of the work that you guys are getting on with at the moment, I just wanted to kind of get my ducks in the row, so to speak, in terms of how the charity operates, because I know there are a few different ways in which a city or school could see a tree or trees planted by you guys. So street trees, for example, I believe that works by someone sponsoring a tree. But correct me if I'm wrong, and how about the other work that you guys do?
Yeah, absolutely. So in essence, all of the projects that we undertake are about community engagement. Really, that is mm-hmm. that's what it boils down to. So how we operate is that we engage people to plant trees and to care for trees, whether it's in a school or housing estate or in a park. With street trees, it's slightly different for obvious sort of health and safety reasons, and that we need to plant street trees using contractors. So it's not safe to have people volunteering, you know, planting trees in the streets. And it's also a much more, it's a different process as well. There's lots more engineering and you know, infrastructure involved. And so that's one reason that we started a new Trees for Streets online fundraising platform. So yes, absolutely, people can sponsor trees in their local, on their street or in their local neighbourhood, and that's a way for them to then get involved in street tree planting as well. And then we can still engage people in helping to look after those street trees, but it's just the actual planting of trees in the streets tends to be more technical and need a professional to be involved.
And are you having a say on what trees are planted in those streets?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we would always work with the local authority or the landowner in any case. So whether it's a school or a housing estate, we would always talk to the landowner and the local council about what trees are most suitable for their area. And that can depend on the local climate or the soil or the type of space that you're planting into and the local community. So we would always consult. And obviously we've got people on our team as well who are very knowledgeable, who are able to recommend certain trees. And so we would engage the community on that as well, and talk to local people about the types of trees that they would like to see. Mm. But we would do that in a structured way so that we're not presenting a blank canvas, if you like. You know, we can let people know what sort of trees would establish and would thrive in their local area, and then talk to them about what they want from their tree, because trees provide so many different services. You know, they might be planted to produce fruit or timber, or provide shade, or help with flood mitigation. So all these different parameters help us in our selection. So it's quite a complex process, but it's a really interesting one.
Yeah, and are you picking those trees with climate change in mind as well, and future-proofing these spaces?
Yes, absolutely. So I think that diversity of trees is crucial, and not just tree species, but also looking at different cultivars, structural diversity as well. So we need to be planting a different range of trees. And yes, we absolutely need to be thinking about the climate of the future. So that's very much part of that decision-making process, yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant. And just to confirm, so those schools and parks, for example, that are getting those trees, do they apply and then you guys kind of pick and choose which projects you think are really going to do well, or how does it work there?
Yeah, it's quite a fluid process, really. I mean, so we are a charity, so we need to raise funding for any projects that we undertake. So it can flow both ways, really. Sometimes a community group or a local authority will come to us and suggest a project and be looking for funding. And then we can take that to funding partners. And sometimes it happens the other way around. So we might have some funding, and it may or may not be restricted to a certain area or a certain type of project. And then again, we can then take that out to the, you know, the relevant partners to develop the project. So we're quite flexible, we're quite fluid in how we work like that. We obviously have parameters in place. We want to be targeting places where trees are most needed. So we look for certain metrics like existing tree canopy cover. We tend to plant where obviously there's low or medium tree canopy cover, so less than 20% tree canopy cover is where we target and prioritize where we work. But we also look for places where people might be facing barriers to engaging with nature, and then we can help to overcome those barriers. And by planting trees, or, you know, almost giving them permission and empowering them to be able to get involved in that process is a really powerful way of engaging people with nature.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then they're more likely to take care of those spaces in the future, aren't they?
Yes. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And that is, you know, proven. I mean, we do go back and look at the trees that we've planted and ensure that they are thriving, not just surviving, but thriving. and you know, we do really well in that respect. And it's just so wonderful to see when people have really connected with their local environment. And I mean, I've been to planting days on housing estates, for example, where neighbours have come out and they haven't actually spoken to each other before, because it would feel weird to go around to someone's house and just kind of say, oh, hi. But actually, if they're out in their little green space outside and they're planting trees together, you get chatting. And that's where you start to get some amazing social connections happening between people. And it takes the pressure away of you know, talking and going to meet somebody. Because if you're just working alongside each other, you start to chat and you know, things happen. It's really exciting to see.
So I wanted to talk to you about your new campaign as well, which is called Trees Breathe New Life. So what is this campaign about and what are its ambitions?
So we've launched this campaign on the back of a project called Forgotten Places. And the idea of that project was to, like I mentioned earlier, it's about targeting where we're working in places that have low canopy cover and have also face social and economic issues. So there might be, you know, lack of jobs, lack of opportunities, and where people are struggling. And in those sorts of places, often trees are seen as a nice to have and not part of the solution. And what we were doing is really helping to engage people in their local environment by tree planting, but also by training and providing, you know, upskilling people and showing them that actually you can actually get a job in the green sector. You know, these things do exist, and really helping to kind of open people's eyes to the opportunities and show how trees can help. They can be, you know, a really important part of the solution to revitalising places that have been a bit left behind. So that's where the Forgotten Places term came. And this particular project, we found that the need we identified was particularly strong in coastal areas. And these are often places where younger people have left. They often, you know, sort of drawn into London and the bigger cities to find work. And some of these coastal areas are left behind, and there aren't many opportunities for people. So what we wanted to do was try and reverse that and show that trees can actually help to provide jobs. They can actually help with people's mental health and well-being. And they can also be part of the solution towards, you know, some of these horrific issues that we're facing, climate change, biodiversity crises, you know, some really important things that people are really worried about.
Yeah.
So Trees Breathe Life, that the idea is just showing that trees can actually be part of the solution. And it's not just about, you know, planting a tree here and there, but it's about that, it's that sort of ripple effect of how, you know, planting trees can then lead on to creating more opportunities for people. So the campaign itself is really targeting, it's three audiences really. It's targeting local authorities to help us to find land to plant trees.
Yeah.
It's targeting funders, because we can't do anything without funding behind us. and it's targeting communities as well, just to say, you know, this exists. We're keen to do more. We've had a really successful 18-month project and we'd love to do more, you know, and encouraging people to let us know if that is of interest for them in their local area.
Amazing. And I probably talk about this every single podcast, but the skills gap is a real problem, a real issue across the sector. So I'm interested to find out how much success you've had kind of promoting, you know, trees as creating jobs. Has there been much interest?
Yes, absolutely. There is so much interest. So Trees for Cities, I would say that our main role in this is at the kind of starting point. It's getting people inspired, getting them curious about the natural world, engaging them and then involving them in the work that we do. So it's very much at that more informal early stage of just saying, hey, you know, this is possible. You could actually make a career out of this. It's fun and it's good for you, and there are lots and lots of reasons to do it. So we do a lot of work with schools and with younger people who are maybe have just left school and are thinking about what career they might be interested to take on. So that's really our sort of niche area, if you like, is that initial engagement. And some of the evaluation we've done shows that 70% of the people who came to our planting events had never planted a tree before.
Oh, wow.
So that was really strong and really powerful for me to show that we are we're doing really well in this, in actually hooking people in, showing, you know, getting them engaged.
Yeah.
But the next step then is kind of moving them along that pathway to say, well, you know, signposting them to other organisations, where, you know, there are plenty of people out there who offer more formal training and can help them to progress along that pathway. And so that's something that I'm keen to do much more of as well. And then one particular aspect that I was really proud of was working with our partner Rewilding Youth in Hull, who did an incredible job of engaging some Kickstart trainees who had faced quite difficult personal circumstances. Mm. They were out of work. And they took part in this scheme and were really a fantastic group of young people who got involved in the project and helped to engage the local community. And the project's now come to an end, unfortunately, but some of those trainees have since gone on to secure jobs with the local authority, which is just such a brilliant story. It's such a brilliant, you know, when they were telling us about it, well, our eyes were welling up. We were so proud of these young people. They've done so well. So it's wonderful. And that's what we're all about, really.
Yeah, real success story.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're seeing a lot of stories hitting the headlines recently. I'm sure you've seen them too, about councils felling trees despite just an enormous outrage from the local community. What are your thoughts about this? And what would your suggestion be to those councils? What are the alternative choices?
Yeah, yes, it's very upsetting to see some of these stories. I mean, I don't know the details of some of the local, you know, the recent stories that have come out. We're not directly involved in it, but I am appalled, really, to see that the news that's come out recently. There are very few design schemes that can't be worked around existing trees. I think there's certainly huge room for improvement. I don't think you can use that as an excuse, use a design scheme as an excuse, really, for felling so many mature trees. It's you can't replace like for like. You can't fell mature trees and plant new ones. I mean, that's not the reason for planting new trees, and that's never something that we would want to be involved in. Mature trees, I mean, trees provide so many services. Not only are they gorgeous and beautiful to look at, I'm staring at one now as I'm sort of ranting, but they provide so many services, and they cool the air and clean the air and sequester carbon and provide shade and, you know, help mitigate flooding, you know, it's a huge list. But they only really start to do that when they're mature. Mm. And so by felling mature trees and then saying that you're going to plant new ones just isn't good enough. It really isn't. So I think there's so many local authorities do such fantastic work.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think when you see an example like that, it just undermines the sector, and it's distressing to see it.
Well put. So the charity itself, you've planted over 1.5 million trees, correct, in towns and cities over the years?
Yes, well researched. Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Got my facts straight here. Yeah. What would you say are some of the biggest or most common challenges to planting trees in cities? I guess you kind of touched on earlier that those street trees are probably the most challenging ones to plant.
Yeah, they're challenging to plant operationally, I suppose, in terms of, you know, finding spaces. I think finding land generally is probably our biggest challenge, it's fair to say. In an urban environment, you know, land is at a premium and you're competing against room for development. So that probably is our biggest limiting factor, in all honesty. Having said that, you know, there are plenty of, you know, spaces out there. There are plenty of small unused spaces where you can plant trees. So, you know, these kind of pocket woodlands or you know, just even just single trees planted into kind of small, you know, triangles of land. There are opportunities out there, but it's not always easy to find them. And even at face value, if you see a site that looks like it has potential, sometimes there are underground services. So, you know, that is probably the biggest challenge. And then, you know, with street trees particularly, then cost.
Yeah.
You know, it is expensive. Relatively speaking, when you're comparing it to planting a small sapling, then they're obviously more expensive. Having said that, they're well worth it. I mean, the level of the values you get back from planting a street tree are enormous. So it's a small price to pay, really, for the level of value that you get back. And I would say as well, I suppose another barrier is local authority capacity. Sometimes they don't always have the capacity to be managing the trees they've currently got sometimes, let alone planting new trees. So sometimes, you know, that can lead to some cultural barriers or, you know, capacity barriers to planting. But as I say, I mean, we have a really strong network of local authority partners around the country who do fantastic work. So where there's a will, there's certainly a way. Yes,
there's a way. Absolutely. Yeah, kind of bringing us back to that skill shortage though, isn't it, that we really need more people coming into this industry
throughout,
and helping absolutely
and in terms of, you know, forestry and arboriculture as well as horticulture, you know, throughout really we do the different levels, and not just people out there planting the trees, but people who are getting involved in other aspects of the work. You know, I've come through development, so project development and program development, and we need fundraisers, and we need people who are good at the marketing and the communications and all the aspects that are needed to ensure that we're planting and looking after our trees. We term it plant, protect, promote in our strategy, and I think they, you know, that does help to sum up what's needed to ensure that a tree, you know, yes, we plant the trees, but also to ensuring that they survive and thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. And coming back to that point on finding land, because obviously the government has these huge ambitious targets around tree planting, and I'm wondering how viable you believe that is, and what's your experience of engaging local authorities and landowners in kind of taking part in that tree planting?
Yeah, it's a challenge, but I think we need to look at how we use our land. I mean, obviously, we're much more focused, well, we're entirely focused on urban planting. So there are challenges within the urban context. But obviously, at national scale, you know, the government is also looking at land use for in terms of agriculture and other land uses, and ensuring that we're using the land as well as we can. You know, we can't be planting trees everywhere. Obviously, there are other habitats that are incredibly important in, you know, peatlands and grasslands and so on. And so there are different habitats that equally need to be protected and expanded. But I think, you know, the government is obviously looking at this closely, and you know, but the urban context is where we have more expertise and more knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of moving to the other side of that, I suppose, have you struggled to source trees? Where do you source from? Has that been an issue at all? Has that been okay?
It has. It's certainly an area of concern for the sector.
Okay.
We haven't personally had significant struggles yet, but there have been a few projects where partners have had to postpone planting because they haven't been able to source the species or the size of trees that they need. So there certainly are, you know, there are concerns, and not only with sourcing the right trees, but also ensuring that they're obviously free of pests and disease. And climate change is obviously exacerbating some of those issues. So that's certainly an area of risk for the sector the tree nursery sector is looking at very closely, and the government.
Yeah, absolutely. And are you finding that there's a particular tree that's used most commonly, or is it really case by case?
I mean, we would say case by case. Yeah, I mean, I think as I mentioned before, so I think the diversity of species is really important. We also need to be mindful of pests and disease again, and not be planting same species or cultivars as ones that are affected by tree pests and disease. So I think diversity is absolutely the key.
Yeah, absolutely. Another arm or branch, if you will, of Trees for Cities. That's terrible, terrible, terrible pun. I'm so sorry.
That's fine.
Is working with businesses that need to offset their carbon, as we've kind of talked about, land use. How successful has that been in engaging businesses?
Yes, I mean, we have operated a fairly small carbon offset scheme for a few years, which we're looking at the moment. Because obviously for the main carbon offset schemes aren't suitable in the urban context, again, because of the scale and just for lots of reasons. So it's something that we're looking at very closely. And, you know, personally, I feel that I'm more interested in starting to kind of change the narrative a little bit. With planting in the urban environment, more thinking about nature-based solutions for cities. In cities, I think climate change is some of the biggest risks in cities is around heat and flooding.
Yeah.
And I feel that actually, as an urban tree planting charity, we can have more impact in planting for those risks. And for the social value of what we do, rather than the carbon.
Yeah.
So that's something that we are looking at the moment.
Okay, so maybe a potential focus for the future. Because obviously biodiversity net gain is coming in. I know this isn't 100% your area, but those arguments are being had, aren't they, around offsetting or providing those on site and all sorts. And what can be done in an urban setting?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And again, it does feel like sort of biodiversity net gain is arguably less applicable in the urban environment. Mm. I think it's probably for larger scale kind of, you know, restoration, landscape scale restoration projects, it's possibly more applicable. But yeah, it's a bit of a kind of, you know, a bit of a wait and see on this. I think, you know, again, we're, like you say, we're not directly involved in this, but it's something that we're certainly trying to kind of find out more about and understand how we can apply it to our work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think there's definitely been argument that to do 10% increase on biodiversity on a urban site is asking quite a lot from a site that already is needing to do quite a lot without that anyway. So
yeah, absolutely. But I suppose, you know, typically where we plant, they're usually green deserts. I mean, they're usually sort of amenity grassland with very low biodiversity value.
Yeah.
So, you know, arguably we're significantly increasing, but not always at the scale that's needed for something like the biodiversity net gain to be relevant.
Said right at the start of the podcast, you've recently become CEO. You've touched upon some of your ambitions for the charity over the coming years. Do you anticipate any challenges, and what other ambitions have you kind of got for the charity?
Yeah, so well, like you say, we've planted 1.5 million trees, but we're in our 30th year. It's our 30th anniversary in November.
Fantastic.
And
happy birthday.
Thank you
early
very much,
birthday.
Yes. And we're planning to plant our 2 millionth tree by the end of that year. So that's, you know, I think for us that's going to be a really important milestone. And so what I, at the moment we're in the second year of a 3-year strategy. So I've started at a great time where I can, you know, obviously help to see the charity through the current strategic period. But we'll soon need to start thinking about the future and the next strategic phase. And I think for me, you know, the tree numbers are great. They always give you a really nice milestone. But at the same time, for me, and I think as I was mentioning at the beginning, what's the real area I think we can do, have the most impact is around engaging the communities. So actually, you know, breaking news, we're actually planning to recruit and invest into this within the team.
Fantastic.
And we will shortly be looking for a new director actually to help to lead a new community engagement strategy for us. So this is a great opportunity to plug that actually, if anyone's looking.
Fantastic. Send your CVs.
Absolutely. So I am really, you know, this is something I just feel we can do so much more. And we've got a really good track record for our community engagement. And like I said earlier, you know, I'm really proud of the record that we've achieved. But the community engagement work we've done has tended to be linked to the projects that we deliver. And what I'm keen to do is start to expand out from that and look more broadly at how we can really engage people into green jobs and green careers, or just to lead greener lives. You know, they don't have to do it professionally, but just to live more sustainably and be in touch with nature. So that's something, yes, that there'll be some recruitment starting in the next few weeks, hopefully.
Exciting.
To get that strategy underway. New chief exec, new director, new strategy, new three generation, lots of new exciting things happening.
Yeah, very exciting. Do you anticipate any challenges around fundraising? I mean, you are a charity. Have you struggled with that in the past? There's a cost of living crisis. I'm just wondering how you maybe anticipate that affecting you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fundraising is always a challenge, isn't it? It's such a specialist skill. It really is. I mean, we've got a fantastic team of fundraisers and they do a really good job of getting grants in and securing corporate partnerships. Again, I'm investing into this area as well, because I think we really need to, just to secure our future and ensure that, you know, the funds continue to come in. And there are funds out there for tree planting. I mean, obviously climate change is so high on people's minds at the moment that there is funding going into tree planting, and that's great, but we really need to make the most of that and help to build, you know, use that funding well and build our own future. We are seeing more individuals in sort of donating to the charity, wouldn't be surprised. It's still a small percentage of our income. It has seen some growth, but it's still sort of around 10% at the moment, which is more than it has been in the past. But I mean, with the cost of living crisis is just so extreme that I wouldn't be at all surprised if that does shrink. But I'm keen to, I think, you know, again, coming back to our 30th anniversary and our milestone, 2 millionth tree, I'd be keen to start to work with some new major donors. I'm looking at that as a potential new income stream. Keen to work with more influencers and you know, have some more patrons on board, and so I think that side of things is something that we can do more with, have some ambassadors to really help us to promote our work.
And those influence could potentially open up to an audience that isn't aware of, you know, the work you guys are doing.
Absolutely.
Great.
Well,
best of luck. The last question we always ask our guests is, what plant would you take to a desert island? Now, I can only assume it's probably going to be a tree.
Well, it's got to be a tree, hasn't it? Goodness.
Yes. Got to be,
You can't be out of a job if you're also a tree. it's really hard. This is, of all the questions, this is the one I was really scratching my head over.
This is the hardest. I think I change my answer every time I do a podcast.
Today's favourite tree is, well, I was thinking about this, and I think if it's a desert island, then I started thinking about all the many desert islands that I've been to. not many. So I was thinking back that I had this amazing time in Thailand with Tony Kendall, who was my master's supervisor when I was doing horticulture masters at Reading. And he was the Eden Project Foundation director at the time, which was just starting out. And we went out to Thailand and did some research in the mangroves, and just had the most amazing time. So I think it would have to be a mangrove tree. It's got to be something that will grow on a desert island, isn't it? So I'm hoping that there's a mangrove forest that we can
explore. You can go in and explore there. Yeah,
go amazing. And explore it. Yes, and also there's a bit of there's food there as well, isn't there? So my practical head on could have some crab supper. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, thank you so much again. That's been really interesting to find out more, and best of luck in your new role, and we'll look forward to seeing more you guys do in the future.
Thanks very much, Rachel. Thank you.
I'm Rachel Forsyth, and this has been the Horticulture Week podcast. Make sure you never miss one. Subscribe or follow Horticulture Week podcasts via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast platform. If you are interested in producing a podcast with Horticulture Week, email us at hortweek@haymarket.com. Huge thank you again to Kate, and goodbye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.